We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, folks, what's good? We are back. We're back again. We came for a quick little live reaction and an all-time moment. A car struck a telephone pole outside my house, and we lost power in my house as KU had just made the Final Four. The celebration was on. It was quite literally the worst timing of all time.
Could have happened with like 8 minutes left.
Yeah, it could have. Oh, yeah, could have been.
That would have been bad news.
Down six at half, and we lose power and scrambling to figure out what to do. But doesn't matter. We are back. The Hawks are headed to the Final Four in what, I mean, one of the more exciting halves of basketball I can remember as a Kansas fan. Like, legitimately, one of the all-time pumpings when you consider, I mean, we said it a little bit earlier on that live stream, but like, AB, tensions were, like, nerves were high. We were down six at half. Things were not going well. We hadn't made a three. We were clanking free throws. Oach was kind of disappearing. CB was refusing to shoot. And we're down six heading into the half. What were you feeling? I mean, we were all watching with friends, and the energy in my basement was very – there was some nervous energy. Like, how concerned were you after the first half?
I think it was natural to feel concerned just in general. And I don't know if it was based on how the game was going or how the history of Elite Eights with Bill Self has been for more than half the time, I guess, now. But, yeah, tensions were – I mean, they were very high. We weren't really talking too much. We were kind of just nervously on our phones and walking around, playing with your exercise balls down there and just hoping that they would heat up, trying to spin it in any positive way we could. But – yeah, that final 8 minutes of the first half was just a disaster, really.
I mean,
Miami kind of took control, and we knew we're the better team, but we didn't have visual proof in that game specifically to have a feeling that we're going to turn it on and do what we did in the second half. So very nervous, and like you said, tensions were sky high in that moment.
Yeah, and I mean, it didn't help that not only did we play bad that first half, but we were coming off really four straight halves of bad basketball. I mean, it's crazy to say. We made the Final Four, but against Creighton, we never really got going. We never felt like we were playing our game. Against Providence, we were just – offense was – we guarded, but our offense was struggling. And so you get to that first half of Miami, and you're all of a sudden like, well, we're running out of time. Like, we keep saying, Oach is going to get it going. CB is going to get it going. And now we're 20 minutes away from those guys' careers being over. Like, I literally tweeted, I really hope – this is not how those guys go out, because they don't deserve to go out with, I don't know, Oach had, I mean, I think he had six at five at half or something, but like, he just was not involved in the game, was not doing Oach things. So it was terrifying, because we've seen this story before. Yeah, it was a mix, definitely, of we've been scarred by VCU 11 years to the day. We've been scarred by Oregon. We've been scarred in all sorts of Villanova. In 16, like, we've just seen teams come out and play completely flat in Elite Eight games. So to see us down six, and really, you know, your big fears were Miami's guard play, right? Like, that was the thing we were scared of. McGusty's hitting contested mid-range jumpers. Now, the other concerning thing that kind of had me worried was Charlie Moore got in foul trouble, and they still built a six-point lead. But, yeah, it's crazy what this fan base has been through when it comes to upsets, to the fact that like a 6-point lead felt humongous to me because it's just we're so used to this. But I said there's nothing more I want than like a 6-0 run and a quick timeout. And I don't know, what do we get it? 35-34? Is that how we came out? I know Dave had a couple buckets.
I can't remember exactly how it turned out, but I remember there was a point where I think it was 35-34, and then Miami immediately made it 40-35.
Yeah.
And because I remember you made a comment, I think Oach had a really bad turnover, mm-hmm. Where it's just like a lazy pass to start a possession, and they went down. Charlie Moore got fouled, kind of got hurt a little bit, but he missed that second free throw, kept it at 5, and after that it was on. Okay, you just steamed.
So, the swing, the biggest part of the game was absolutely, it's 40-38. We force a steal. I think Dewan or Oach hits CB in transition for a dunk. It's 40-40. We play good defense. We get a stop. We come down. We run offense. And the whole first half, the Twitter, if you were following Twitter, it was, why is CB passing on open threes? Why won't this guy shoot? He's a good shooter. We need him to shoot these shots. And he wouldn't do it. And it was scary because you're like, is this a nerves thing? Is this guy scared to shoot right now? He finally just let one fly early in the shot clock, goes in, place went bananas. And we talked yesterday about whether or not KU's crowd was going to show up, whether or not the crowd had been good these last few weeks. It absolutely showed up today. That was a straight up home game for the Hawks. And so that's where you love CB. I think after CB made the shot, you said something like, I want every angle of CB after that. Because he just goes bananas, but that's great, right? Like he's a psycho.
That's exactly what I wanted to see. And we've seen it a few times throughout the year from whether it be CB or Remy the past few weeks. But when guys just go nuts and then you can just tell how into it they are. Dave had a moment later on in the game. I mean, these guys were, you could tell how pumped they were once that lead started to build and they could kind of, you know, feel what they were about ready to do and accomplish. And that's the kind of stuff I love to see, just the raw emotion on the floor. And, you know, it's cool to see them play well, but to react like that, it's dope.
Yeah. So CB gets us up 43-40, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I do not think we looked back. I mean, from there, I think Dave got that and one, what you were talking about, where he just stomps down the sidelines to the bench and just going bananas. Like, the flip had switched to where that team, if they were tied at all, it's flipped to where they just knew they were winning the game. Like they just knew, wow, we're a lot better than these guys. We started playing fast. We were getting out in transition. One of the all-time plays so far of the tournament, I think, is the one where we're in the middle of the run and Oach is on a fast break, misses the layup, kind of a weird footing. He was going a little too fast as he caught it to put it up. Misses the layup. Jalen, like, I rewatched the play, and it was obviously great on Oach, but Jalen gets an incredible rebound, and then Oach just pops out from the crowd back into the corner, wide open for three, splash, and the route was just on. Like, everything was going right. And I think I said to you guys before the game, I said, how nice would it be to just sit back and cruise in a Final Four game or an Elite Eight game? A game that gets you the Final Four. It feels like you think back to Davidson. That game, you're sick to your stomach the entire time. You're waiting for Steph Curry to get going. We looked disgusting on offense that game. You think back to North Carolina. That game came down to the final minutes. And then obviously Duke in 2018 is the tightest basketball game you could possibly see, to the point where Grayson Allen's ball was twirling on the rim. But I said that, and it just didn't seem possible. You're down 6.5, and to just see – that 20 minutes of the second half to outscore them 47-15 and just see everything go our way. I mean, is that as an enjoyable of a tournament game that you can remember in a while from a just standpoint of relaxing the second half and just having fun watching what this team's become?
The only one that came to mind as we were talking about it just the past half hour or so, but the 47-15 number reminds me of like North Carolina in the Final Four. But then even that game got to a single. Was it a one-point game or a four-point? It was something crazy close in the second half.
I think it got down to four or something crazy. Yeah. So, and we stressed.
Ended up pulling away. But, I mean, just in terms of most dominant halves of basketball we've seen, 42-12, I mean, 47-15 is a bigger spread than that. And, I mean, not as big of a game because it's an Elite Eight compared to a Final Four. But to get more to your point, it felt nice to, you know, be able to hop on the live stream with 4 minutes left and – not really worry about missing anything too much except a possible walk-on three or J. Cole finally hitting a shot and, you know, not really mattering. But it's always good to just comfortably roll in a game this big and just, you know, maybe dampers down the celebration a little bit just because you kind of expect it to happen for half an hour or so going into it. But it very nice to sit back and relax.
For sure. So I want to touch on a few things that kind of stood out to me in that second half. Was obviously the offense just turned on. Like, we got going. We've said all year we're a top 10 offense. Shots will start to fall. Ochai hit a big one. CB hit a big one. Remy hit a big one, which we haven't even got it. I mean, Remy's just so awesome. Didn't even put up big numbers today, but that guy's just awesome. Just the energy he plays with, he just makes you happy. But thing I thought that was interesting was we switched. Bill got asked after the game, like, what did we do different with McGusty? McGusty was the one killing us in the first half. Mid-range jumpers, threes. He was on. The main reason they were up six. We switched him to DeJuan. And we put DeJuan on him. And DeJuan locked him up. And, like, to me, that was just a perfect – it sums up what we've been saying all year. Like, we've been pretty – we've wanted Remy to do well, and it's worked out. But we've also said, like, you still need the things DeJuan brings to the table to go to, like, make the run. Because we didn't really have that many elite defenders. The defense has kind of been this team's biggest struggle. So, to see DeJuan just step up and – totally put the clamps on McGusty in the second half and just take it over from that standpoint was huge. And then you still got Remy doing his thing. I think they combined for 14 together. It's nothing huge, but to see Remy bring what he brings, we're in the middle of a run. He makes a big three to extend it, and he's just, you know, constantly getting the crowd going. And then to see DeJuan do it on the other end with the defense, it's like, this is why it wasn't – the answer was never sit DeJuan and play Remy 35, 40 minutes. The answer has always been they both do really good things. Let's make sure we get that out of them. So, like, how you feel going into the Final Four now that it's very clear Remy's a factor? He's maybe our best player right now. But also, like, DeJuan kind of snuck back in there and was like, hey, don't forget about me, guys. Like, I'm pretty freaking good.
Feels great because it's like we've talked for years now, whether it be on the podcast, on Twitter, whatever. The best built teams have two point guards or two ball handlers that can be on the court at the same time. And we're starting to see that more and more as the season goes on. But even more, if we want to go five guards at times, because Jaylen's a good enough rebounder to not kill us.
Yeah.
Like, we can have both those guys on the court. Dave's a little bit banged up. Mitch is banged up. Give those guys a breather. I think Dave only played like 18 minutes today.
Yeah, at 15 points. I mean, might've been the best player on the floor for like when in his time.
So if we can get away with not having to play our two banged up bigs who give us, you know, plenty of production when they're on the court and they're not completely off their game, but also feel comfortable having two point guards in your stretch four, being able to rebound and kind of compete downstairs.
Yeah.
It just opens up so many possibilities for, you know, a creative coach like Bill to kind of do more things and feel more comfortable in certain ways.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, you said it about Jaylen. Like, would you believe me if I said, let's see, Jaylen today, I think he had 5 points, but he was 1 of 8 from the floor, 0 of 4 from three. But, like, the thing I love about Jaylen is, would you have ever watched this game and thought, oh, that guy didn't play good? Like, he still just was getting those offensive rebounds that led to a three in the corner from Oach, was still getting boards, battling every time, playing really good defense on all the switching we had to do. So, like, I was shocked to look at that stat line and see that Jaylen did not have that good of a game, because that dude, I felt like, played his ass off the whole game. So I love Jaylen. I said, like, and I don't know how accurate this is, but I've kind of said these last few weeks, it feels like he's the key to how far we can go. And he obviously was really good in Sweet 16 and second round. So it's nice to see him just continue to do what he does. But yeah, we got to talk about Dave. I mean, Dave has been the most polarizing Kansas big that I can remember. I've seen, like, my dad and people compare it to, like, the Eric Chenoweth situation, where Chenoweth played a ton and people couldn't – they would get so frustrated with him. But David McCormick won us a Big 12 title, regular season title, by playing so well against Texas at Allen Fieldhouse, and now just won us a – helped win us an Elite Eight game against a team where people thought Dave wasn't going to be able to play very much because of how good this guy can stretch the floor. I don't even know how to say his last name, but he was awful. And Dave just, I mean, fouled him out of the game, and we cruised partly because of that. So how hilarious is it to think when you look back on the Dave McCormick saga and storyline of being a Kansas Jayhawk, that he in probably his two biggest games was phenomenal. Like, that's just incredible to me.
It just, it fits his storyline so perfectly that he's just been inconsistent for so long. But when he's on, you've said it before on the pod, he's one of the best bigs in the country. Yeah. And I mean, if that, looking at our other options, if that's our fourth or fifth, like, best player, I mean, first of all, that the ceiling of that team is just insanely high. But you just, you hope you get that Dave more than you get the Dave that fumbles every pass he gets to him or dribbles it off his shoe, which we get a little too often. But he's got the potential. All he needs to do at this point is just string together two more good games. If he can string together two more good games, no one's going to remember how much of a spaz he was for the first 3 years, three and a half years, the inconsistencies, because people just remember the big moments. So, like I said, just string two more together, and, I mean, he'll be a legend here forever.
Yeah, and that's the best part of the tournament is all it takes is a few good weeks, and you can completely change the way you were viewed. But, yeah, I mean, Dave was obviously awesome, but even in the first half, I thought Mitch was our best player. Like, I felt like he was getting big rebounds and just kind of battling with their bigs as we were just we were just kind of out of it, it felt like. But, yeah, you could tell from the jump, Dave, I think he made his first two shots. And, like, that's always a calming thing for me when you see Dave come out and do something good early, because it feels like if Dave doesn't start hot or good, he struggles the rest of the game. But if he comes out, like, I feel like confidence is so big for him. And that man, we've joked for years, he's the most confident dude in the world. If things are starting to fall, he's never seen a shot he didn't want to take. So,
I mean, that side came out today too. That shot he hit in the second half, I think he had a dunk on a fast break.
That almost missed.
He almost got stuffed by the rim. And then I think he had the end one where he went crazy. And then he had that, like, weird, like, middle of the lane turnaround kind of floating jump
off shot. Like, 1 foot, like he was dirt. It was like
through four dudes. And we all looked at each other in the room. I don't even know if we realized it went in because we were so shocked that, what the hell are you doing? And it went in. It was one of the worst attempted shots I've ever seen in my life, but it worked. And when he's on, he's on. And like you said, he's the most confident person in the gym when he hits a few. So,
yeah. And it was like kind of what I said earlier. It was like, everything was working for us that second half. Like, it was just the most fun half of basketball I can remember a Kansas team playing in a long time. All right, I want to talk. I don't know. Do you have any other, like, major takes from the Miami game itself, or do you want to kind of look ahead a little bit to the Final Four, the rest of the tournament, things we've seen? I don't know. Any other takes from the Miami game?
This might be a small Remy take, but I was – kind of encouraged to see him. I feel like in the first half he missed his first two or three shots and didn't look comfortable, and I was kind of having that fear flash before my eyes. We kind of talked about it yesterday, like, what if Remy has a bad game and no one else steps up? And I was kind of thinking, oh my god, this is the game that's going to happen, because of course, why wouldn't it in the Elite Eight? But it kind of felt like he kept attacking, he kept shooting, he kept going at it. He hit a few, and he only had 9 points, like we mentioned before, but just staying aggressive. We've seen guys that, whether they don't play a whole lot all season or they feel like they have a short leash with Bill, they just stop trying.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know. It's a small thing, but seeing him stay aggressive and kind of stay engaged, and it just felt good, because we're going to need him next weekend if we want to, you know, get to where we want to be. So I'm glad he didn't check out or lose all his confidence in the world. And I mean, he's got plenty of confidence. We've seen it for 5 years now. But
I threw this tweet up from our pod, I think, and it was a video that NCAA March Madness put out, and it's Remy taking the regional trophy, the NCAA trophy, handing it over to Bill Self to lift in the air. And it's just like, I cannot believe 3 weeks ago this guy played walk-on minutes in senior night at Texas. Like, that dude started the game, played 7 minutes, and never played again. And now he's the main face. Like, he's the face of this KU Final Four run. And I think Malik in 2018 was crazy, because Malik put up, like, obviously the Duke game was just outrageous what Malik did. Truly legendary stuff. But we've said it. The guy started all season. He was a key contributor to that team. Remy Martin going from non-existent player to superstar in the NCAA tournament. It's like, I think one of the funnest, most memorable storylines that I will tell everyone. Like when I'm a grandpa one day and my kids are like, tell me about the 2022 Kansas. Or they wouldn't be talking like that. I'd be saying, let me tell you about the 2022 Kansas Jayhawks. And it's like, it's going to start with Rooney. It's going to be like, so a man named Rooney was absolutely trash the whole year. Got hurt. Things didn't work out. And just to see it all come together and to see him be the hero, it's truly like straight out of a movie. So, yes, to go back on what you were saying, to see Remy stay aggressive and not – because it could have probably been easy for him to be like, oh, no, things aren't going well again. Maybe I should just relax so Bill doesn't hate me. But he didn't. He kept – he was himself. Let Remy be Remy. We've kind of joked about that, and it worked out. And without Remy, there's a 0% chance this team's going to the Final Four. So it's awesome. But we need him for next week because we've got – Colin Gillespie, one of those just classic Villanova. I mean, we joke a lot about Duke having those just annoying white guys, but Villanova
to a T.
There's another Archie Diacono on the roster. Mm-hmm. Do you know that?
Yeah, well, I saw that. I didn't know that till yesterday because when I'm sure we'll get to it, whether it's today or later in the week. But when Justin Moore went down, I was kind of looking at how many guys they play.
Yeah,
and they only play really six dudes, and Archie Diacono had played like a minute in that game. And I saw that name, and I almost just – the memories that came back into my head were haunting.
Yeah. So
it's crazy. I mean, they just don't stop coming. His parents probably didn't either. But it's like – it's they just got to stop. I wonder how many more there are because it's almost like the Zellers at this point.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, it – I guess when it comes to just like the storylines – of this Final Four. Is this, I mean, imagine KU Villanova being a game that like no one cares about. Like, I think in, I want you to kind of expand on that take that you said in our group chat earlier, like you kind of love that we are the only one seed left and yet we're going to get no, I don't know. Expand on that take you had.
Yeah. So it's not even that we haven't been getting any press or that we won't get any press coming into this week. We haven't been getting press really at all, I feel like. I feel like we've been so under the radar, and not in like a underdog way, because we've been, you know, this weekend we've kind of been bouncing back and forth between the favorite to win it all or the second favorite to win it all. And people have been choosing us to go to the Final Four and everything, but it just feels like no one's talking about whether it was our region just not being the most exciting or us not really having like a super superstar like showing out or not having a coach that's going on a retirement tour. But yeah. And that's going to be the same way in New Orleans. I would guess 95% of the media talk is going to be surrounded by either the Coach K retirement or Duke versus North Carolina rivalry in the Final Four. And we're going to be on the back burner. And that's 1000% fine with me because those kids are going to get tight. And whoever wins that game, especially if it's Duke going into Monday, I mean, we talked about the pressure that Coach K, we would like to blame him, but ESPN, all the people above were putting on those 18, 19-year-olds for K's last home game. Imagine that going into a national championship game.
Yeah.
Like, it just feed them all the media attention, all the pressure in the world, and let us sit back and just make it feel more like a normal basketball game, even though we really know that it's bigger than that.
I mean, and it's wild because Duke, North Carolina, which deservedly so, they've never met in the tournament, which is crazy. And the Coach K storyline, like, hate on Duke all you want. I hate the guy. I was like literally triggered how bad Arkansas was last night, but the fact that he got to the Final Four is like a power move. Like, it's pretty sweet that he did that. If I were Coach K, I would be like on Twitter tweeting at guys like me being like, suck it, you freaking loser. But the fact that
you he's imagine in the that Final popping Four, up on your phone. Reply tweet from Mike Krzyzewski. Suck it, loser.
Yeah. I listened to the pod. I hate you guys. But I mean, them playing North Carolina, like, that is a huge storyline. And I am very excited to watch that game. But you look at the other side, and KU Villanova is a big storyline too. I mean, I saw our fan base last night when Houston lost, and it was like, oh, my God, we play Villanova again. I don't know about you. I want it. Like, I've said kind of from the jump, I wanted Villanova more than I wanted Houston. the revenge factor, that's not even really why I wanted it, but I do want it for the revenge factor. Like, that's a great storyline. Jay Wright, I've said this before, I think Bill kind of solidified it. I think now that Coach K is out after the season, the top two coaches in the country are Jay Wright and Bill Self. And I don't really know how you can argue against that. They both did it this year. I don't care that Izzo has more Final Fours and Mark Few, PU.
Get him out of here.
Yeah. I mean, we got to get Jay Billis on the pod. I'm serious to talk about that because Bill being six is crazy. So that list is officially over. But like now on the other side, you've got the top two coaches in college basketball and two teams that met in 2018. And you've got big names, guys that have been around college basketball forever, Gillespie, Abaji, Lightfoot. Like, it's just, for a true college basketball fan, I think the Villanova-KU game would be a great headliner, big-time storyline. Like, what? Like, if the other side of the bracket would have been Arkansas-Purdue, like, you know what I mean? You're still fine with a Final Four that's Arkansas, Purdue, KU, Villanova, because now you've got KU, Villanova leading the story. Like, it's a big, it's still two big brands clashing in a Final Four rematch. And now that's your, like, that's your second best, that's your by far least biggest storyline. So I just think it's going to be in, I think it's the best. I wanted to throw this question out to you. Is this the best Final Four since 08? I think there's one other one I'd consider, but
yeah. Are you thinking 15?
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw Rothstein tweet that too.
I didn't see that.
I mean, if we're talking brand wise, this is probably better than 15, but the Kentucky.
What was that? So that was Kentucky, Duke, Wisconsin, Michigan State.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, Wisconsin probably lightens that a little bit, but then they had the story of actually going and beating Kentucky, and
yeah,
Kentucky team was undefeated, and Duke had the sick recruiting class, and I mean, that was an amazing Final Four, but even to compare this one to that one, I mean, it just kind of shows you how good of a Final Four it really is. The TV companies couldn't be happier. Is it going to be the most watched Final Four ever? Duke Carolina in the Final Four, Coach K's last game? That might be the highest rated basketball game of all time.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
KU Villanova, a little appetizer for the biggest. Yeah, it will be the most watched college basketball game of all time. You got
speaking of, like, ticket prices. Good. What's a get-in price going
to
be for that?
I haven't even checked. I've been too scared to check. I don't know. We have no clue what that's going to look like. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm so excited for the Final Four. I really, like, I want to watch Duke and UNC and care a ton. And so I want to throw this question out to you. Before we started, we wanted Duke gone. We wanted them to lose to Cal Fullerton. We wanted them to lose to Michigan State. We wanted them to lose to Arkansas, Texas Tech. Now that they've made the Final Four, the Coach K farewell tour has worked out. He's no doubt leaving, flexing his muscles. It doesn't matter if they lose. So, like, to me, the only way for me to feel good about this farewell tour ending is for us to be the ones to end it. So, like, I don't know if I can bring myself to do this, but is there any way we should cheer for Duke on Saturday, or is it insane? If we beat Villanova, should we be all in on playing Carolina?
I don't know. I mean, Carolina's as hot as anybody, but I do think Duke's probably the better team. Yeah. I mean, I guess we'll find out. But if I knew we were going to win, obviously I would want to play Duke, because beating Kay to end his career would be like the greatest thing ever, especially for you. I'd be more happy for you that was the scenario than just a national championship. But if that were to happen, if Kay were to beat Duke and Coach K in the championship, wouldn't that be such like a beautiful passing of the torch moment to the greatest active coach right now?
Yeah, it would be. And that's like, it would be pretty funny for North Carolina to beat them in the last home game and then beat them in the Final Four.
So, well, you said that he would. I thought about this driving home. A lot of things were going through my brain on that drive home from Topeka today. Yeah. If Carolina beats Duke in the Final Four, we're getting that Twitter alert on April 15th that says Coach K is coming back, right? He can't have his last game at home be ruined by Carolina beating him by 20. He can't have his last game ever be in the Final Four against Carolina and lose to them. Like, obviously, it's not going to change his legacy completely, but he's going to have such a sour taste in his mouth that his arch rival and a first-year head coach in Hubert Davis went in and, like, stole that all from him. Like, and we know how he is. They say it's all about the kids. I've already seen Final Four graphics that have Colin Gillespie, Baycott, or Brady Manick, one of them, and Ochai on it, and then it's Coach K for Duke. But it's all about the kids. I'm not saying he made it, but, you know, he's loving that. It wouldn't surprise me. And we just saw Brady do it in football. But if I don't think he would do it if he lost to the Hawks in the finals or something like that, or Villanova for what it's worth. But if that's Carolina true. In his two biggest like games, I guess, of not his career maybe, but like definitely of his retirement tour.
Biggest storyline games of his career.
It might change his mind a little bit.
Yeah. So maybe I should go back on what I said, the farewell tour. If he didn't have North Carolina waiting for him, if that's Kentucky down there, even that would – if it's Purdue down there and Purdue ends it, it's like, okay, they made the Final Four. They overcame the loss to North Carolina. They made a great run. They just weren't better than that team on the other side. But now you're right. I mean, you lose your final two big games of the year to North Carolina in the Final Four in New Orleans on that stage. That'd be bad. And I do think he'd consider coming back. If you were John Shire, are you secretly hoping Coach K, like, I know you don't want your team to lose, but like John Shire, if Duke wins it all, that man is walking into a buzzsaw of expectations. Because if he has even remotely any bad season next year, and by bad season, I mean if they get like a 4 or 5 seed, that fan base is going to hate him, right? Because they're going to be like, Coach K did it in his last year.
Aren't they going to say that anyways? I mean, Duke's like one of those programs. They're going to have crazy expectations regardless.
That's true.
I would almost think expectations would drop a little bit if they won a title because, I mean, we saw in 2009, you win a title and then you kind of expect like a rebound year. Like no one repeats as champs. It eases the palate enough of the fans to like be more understanding of a you know, not an awful year, but get a 4, 5, 6 seed and maybe losing the second or Sweet 16, second round, something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it almost take pressure off because if they lose in this round, then all the fans are going to have the same bitter taste that Coach K would have that Carolina got the best of them twice and they'll be going into next year trying to build off of, not to say failure because they got to the Final Four, but not going as far as they would have hoped.
Yep. So I want to throw this out there, and me and you talked about this, and I think, you know, when you look back at our last two Final Four runs before this, 2012, it was a big time. We're happy to be here, right? That team, 2 seed, had lost in the Big 12 tournament, wasn't the deepest team, wasn't the most talented team. We made it. We were pumped. But you had Kentucky and Anthony Davis sitting on the other side, and you knew even if we make that game, like, we are going to be big dogs, And it's just, it was a daunting task to beat Kentucky. 2018, same thing. You get there, you beat Duke, but all of a sudden you're like, holy smokes, Villanova's a different animal. Like, Villanova wasn't the number one overall seed, but that team was the best team in the country, and it was pretty clear most of the year. But now we're here, and I think we're the best team left. Like, I'm pretty confident if you just look at the whole season and you even look at what we just did in that second half, I think we showed we have a gear that I'm not sure any of the – maybe – I mean, honestly, North Carolina might have that type of gear. And Duke's been great in the final minutes of games. But to watch us do that for 20 minutes straight, it kind of like gave me this hope of like, okay, we're the best team left. We just go out and play good, which is a big – you never know if you're going to. But like, it's the first Final Four since 08 where I'm like, okay, we're showing up to win the whole damn thing. We're not showing up because we're happy to be here. This isn't a family reunion. We're not going to be doing all these stories about, I mean, we might. It's still cool to see family show up and see their kids and nephews in the Final Four. But like, now it's like, we're not done. And I think that's been the players saying that over and over, is like, we're not done yet. Like, we want more trophies. This team is not done. So, am I right? Like, we should be expecting to go in and just play our game. And if we do, we're going to win the national title, right?
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. And even if you look back at like the locker room videos from 2018, and I mean, Bill was like crying, and like, it almost felt like when they beat Duke, like they accomplished what they wanted to accomplish.
Yeah.
And we didn't realize it in time because we're crazy fans and we'll talk ourselves into winning any game. And we just like, oh, we'll beat Villanova. And then the other side of the bracket was like kind of awful. And we can just talk ourselves into it. But it just felt like a whole different attitude and mindset. And maybe it was the fact that we won the game by 100 points today. But no, you're 1,000% right. It doesn't feel like I'm still pumped we made a Final Four, but I'm not like still thinking about it. And
even me,
the job's finished. Like, I'm like, okay, well, now we got Villanova. Well, who do they have? You know, Moore's out. Let's go win two more games and hang another banner and start thinking about how we're going to fit six banners in that little window at Allen Fieldhouse compared to five, because it looks pretty full. It looks pretty full.
Yeah. They always find a way. I'm always impressed the way they can kind of move those jerseys and fit more in there. But yeah, you said it. Like, I'm pumped we made the Final Four, but really I'm just like, the sense of relief I feel that we didn't choke in the Elite Eight. And now I think that's kind of the vibe. Like, it was obviously a fun celebration. You got to celebrate it, but it was not like the 2018 celebration where, I mean, we beat Duke. We were underdogs. Nobody expected us to do it. Whereas today it was like, everyone expects you to do it. We delivered. Now we're where we wanted to get all year. And now it's our time to just freaking go in. And that, Bill, we've said it, and it's felt like it was so far away. Like, you think when 2020 happened and you see the roster we have coming back that next year, we tried to talk ourselves in to that lineup. And, oh, Marcus Garrett, that's kind of a unique. We've never had this style of point guard. We're so big. We're so long. We're going to be so good defensively. That was a fail. We knew that team wasn't winning the title. Mm-hmm. And then even this year, at times, me and you were guilty of it. And I think we were right. When DeJuan was our point guard, that team probably still could have made a run. But if we were sitting in the Final Four here with just DeJuan as our point guard, you're not saying, oh, we're the favorites to win the title. Mm-hmm. Like, the reason you can say that is because we have Remy. So Bill Self getting his second title has felt to me, even a few months ago, felt like such a long shot. It felt like, oh, okay, this team could maybe do something, but they're probably not going to win a title. And then you've got the FBI stuff, which might get us a postseason ban or get Bill a postseason ban. So now all of a sudden, his next title opportunity is 5 years down the road. But now it's two freaking games away. We're 4.5-point favorites, right? I don't know what that line
is. So I think it opened at 3.5, and it's bounced between that and 4.5. So,
yeah, we're 4.5-point favorites in a Final Four game, a team that just lost their leading scorer, second leading scorer, Justin Moore. And then we've got Duke and Carolina on the other side, which is terrifying, but it's not vintage Duke Carolina. Like, these are Duke Carolina teams that are incredibly beatable and teams that we've flat out been better than all season. So there is just – if Bill was going to go get a second title, he's got his opportunity. So we got to go execute.
Got to take advantage of it. They're not easy to come by. We've been, you know, on the bad side of it way too many times. But yeah. I mean, just so much changes with his narrative if he gets it.
I don't know.
Like I heard earlier today this, and I didn't really do the math in my head until I heard this, but last 14 tournaments, this is his fourth Final Four.
Yeah.
Like that's, you'll take that clip almost anywhere. You're making one every 3.5 years.
I mean, think if we got 14 more years of Bill, right? Like we'd all be pretty pumped. He coaches to 74.
Yeah. He gets eight Final Fours.
We get four more Final Fours in that span. He goes to 8. Like,
right.
And it feels like he could do more than that because he's had so many blown opportunities. So,
and you say it all the time. It's like you keep putting yourself in the situation or the position to get good matchups in the tournament, get, you know, favorable draws, whatever it may be. Sometimes it's just going to, you know, break your way and you're going to get it. It's an impossible tournament to win consistently.
Yeah.
But it's just something's got to break his way at some point, and this might be the year. We'll find out in 9 days from now, I guess, which is just gives me goosebumps thinking about it. But
I know.
I mean, everything changes, and you know, just get one more, and then we can shut people up on Twitter. That ass that's been responding to every single tweet I tweet out. It's like, oh well, UConn blue blood win more than, you know, win half as many titles as them.
Is that even a UConn fan, or is he a K-State fan?
No, he's a K-State fan. He just likes talking shit. I've muted him, and he doesn't know that yet, so I'll let him keep talking into thin air. Going crazy, but I'll let loose if they get another one. So,
yeah, and I said earlier, like Jay Wright, Bill Self, they're number one and two in my mind starting next season as top coaches in college basketball, and I give the edge to Jay Wright right now.
Yeah.
But if Bill Self gets the title, he's now got the same amount of Final Fours, the same amount of national championships, more Elite Eights, more wins, more conference time. Tournament champ or more conference championships, more conference tournament championships. So like,
there's nothing Bill you could argue
will be ahead. What?
There's nothing you could argue to put Jay Wright ahead. If yeah, Bill would
exactly.
Get one.
Bill Self will be the best coach in college basketball if he gets a natty, and that's how funny this stupid tournament is. The narrative because of three games can shift from, oh, the guy can't win in March to, oh, this guy's the best coach in college basketball, and I want it. Bill deserves it. He can do it. This team can do it. So, yeah, it just comes down to come out, play loose, play. I think there's going to be an element of, like I said, relief. You're here now. Now you're kind of just – I don't want it to feel like you're playing with house money because we're not – like, I want them to feel like we're not. We need title. But I do think now we're just kind of there. We can relax and just play our game and hope that our game's better than the other three teams. But we'll see if that happens.
So
but.
This is a toss-up because it's – and maybe it's not a fair question because it's a longer turnaround time. Do you have any fear that this – you know, we talked about the second half earlier. We could compare it to Purdue a little bit in 2017. Is there any fear of, like, a letdown coming into the next game like we had with Oregon?
I think
there's a long enough gap. There's almost a full week to where you're, you know, have some time to let that sit and get four or five practices in and all the media around it to where you'll probably forget about it by the time tip comes. But
yep. And I think Oregon was just a tough matchup. And I mean, Jordan Bell is tough to prepare for in one day, especially when Landon was just not, he wasn't athlete. It wasn't a good matchup for him. So I think, the week off is going to be huge. I still think we can say it. Like, Oach had a big second half, but he's still not doing Oach things consistently.
I agree. But when I looked at his stat line after the game, I was blown away with how much I had, like, misjudged that game. I mean, it's 8 of 12. I think he was 3 of 5 from 3. 18 points, 5 or 6 rebounds, 4 or 5 assists. Like, there were points in that game where he looked like checked out or super tight. He had a couple really bad turnovers and almost missed that fast break dunk, which was crazy. We almost missed two of those in like a 2 minute span.
Yeah.
But overall, and you know, I know we're not huge box score guys because there's more to the game than that, but I was kind of surprised with how efficient and you know, how
that's
good
true.
His numbers actually looked. So.
So, yeah, I guess so. Maybe instead of saying he's still due to get going, maybe it's just, okay, he's back now. Like, we were worried. He showed today that he can still be the All-American that he is. I think guys like CB are going to thrive in a stage like this where you're in the Superdome. you have millions of people watching you. Like, that guy lives for something like this, and so does Remy. And I just hope Oach does too. So I think we've got the – I think Bill has said it. We don't have the most talented team, but we think we're the most talented team. And that's the thing you need to have in a Final Four. Like, if this team goes in there thinking we're the best team here, they will go win the Natty, because if they just play to that with that mindset and go hit shots, just do what we've done all year to get here. And I really like our chances. Do you have any updated like odds or anything like that?
For the title or for the
specifically? Just kind of like the title. I'm sure they changed once UNC beat St. Peter's.
So Duke's still the favorite. They're +160, and we're like right behind them at +180. And then Villanova's 450, and Carolina's 500. So it's us and Duke. I mean, and then they have the exact results here. Duke to beat Kansas is +350, and Kansas to beat Duke is also +350. So it sounds like it's pretty much just a toss up, and they think that Carolina is a little bit worse than Villanova. So yeah. Duke has a little bit of a better chance to move on. But I was talking about this earlier too, just as like a broad Final Four statement. I think, and maybe I'm crazy, but I think you might agree with me because I saw your tweet yesterday, which I can't wait to quote when we get off this, that when you said we're not going to lose to Nova if we play them. I can't wait to – yeah, I'm going to quote it and say I can't wait to watch Ryan talk himself out of this tweet that he had on Saturday afternoon.
No,
because there's going to be a point where you get terribly nervous and you're sick in the group chat.
Well, I'll be nervous, but like we're beating Nova. We are.
And I think we're both really confident that we'll beat Nova. I do think that there's a better chance that Carolina beats Duke than Nova beats KU. Maybe that's just me being high on the Hawks right now.
I think they've got the same line, right? 4.5, but or
yeah, I can pull up
both ways.
Current lines, really quick. Yeah, KU's -4, Duke's -4.5, so it's about the same. But Carolina's so damn hot right now. We've already seen them beat Duke this year, like pretty handily. And I don't know. I mean, we'll talk about it more later on in the week, but Villanova's only going to have like 5. So my buddy Casey texted me this yesterday.
Yeah.
Going into yesterday, Villanova had 6 guys on their roster that averaged more than 1.8 points per game. Yeah. And their leading scorer got hurt. He tore his Achilles, and he's obviously not going to play. So they have 5 dudes on their roster that average more than like a walk-on would. Mm-hmm. How many guys are they possibly going to play? And we saw it today. When we get running, we can run someone out of the gym and just go up and down on people. And we're not terribly deep. We've got 6 or 7 guys that can consistently go in, and then we can throw in some junk minutes from J. Cole or KJ came in for 30 seconds and did a job. So
Big stop.
Right. So yeah. I don't know. I just I'm not scared of Villanova like I think Duke might be of North Carolina.
I think the biggest thing that's scary about Villanova is just the history. It's not necessarily this – you're not looking at Colin Gillespie and Jermaine Samuels. Those are like – now that Moore's out, those are your guys. Those are the guys that are going to beat us in this game. Now, I think Brandon Slater, lefty, decent shooter, I think. He's good. Eric Dixon, Caleb – I mean, they've got guys – but you're not looking down at this roster and seeing a Jalen Brunson and Vivincenzo or those guys, the Micah Bridges, Mikael Bridges. Like, you're not seeing those guys. What you're scared of
in the last 5 years.
We're scared of Jay Wright, really, is what we're scared of. And it's fair. He's a monster. And he's
a handsome devil.
Yeah. And I think he has – I don't think any coach ever has scouted KU – as well as he has. Like, I remember that 2016 game. Like, it was – they had every set we ran perfectly. They prevented everything we wanted to do with it. Like, they were so ready for everything we did. So, Jay Wright's scary. This team, though, Gillespie's scary because he's been there 1,000 years and he's just solid. He doesn't make mistakes. But, yeah, if you're going to this Final Four like terrified of Villanova, you're crazy, because it's going to be a close game. It's going to be a nail biter, and we're going to be nervous. But like, we are flat out, just the way the season's gone, we are better than Villanova. So assuming nerves could get to us and we could play bad, and Superdome's hard to shoot in, we might not make shots. But like, if you're just saying both these teams on paper, who's going to win? The Hawks are going to win, and we're going to play on Monday. So,
and I'm not a Villanova expert. You might know more than I do. But just based off what you said the last few minutes, if you were to draft, say, the top 12 players, say the five starters and the six man. So for us, our five starters plus Remy. Yeah. And then their five starters plus whoever their six man is. Might be Archie Diacono now. Yeah. When is the last Jayhawk taken?
If you were to draft them?
Draft them, just like snake draft back and forth, 1-2. So oh, I would think Ochai probably goes one, then Gillespie, and then is it a string of Jayhawks after that? Like, to me,
oh, it's between almost – us and Villanova. Us and
Villanova, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's Ochai, Gillespie, Brown, Wilson, Remy – or it's Ochai, Gillespie. Maybe it's Remy, Brown, Jalen, Dave.
And then Samuels.
And then maybe Samuels. Yeah, Samuels might slip in. So we have
six of the top nine players.
Yep.
And then they just fill it in. So, I mean, we're definitely the most talented team. Now that it doesn't always win out, but if you have talent plus at least a break even at coach,
then
you got to feel pretty good. Especially, I mean, it's one thing to be without your best player, one of your best players for like months, and you're kind of used to dealing with it. I mean, they've played without Moore for 2.5 minutes. I mean, that happened very late in the game.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I agree. Like, the way we're going to lose this game is by just, like, our stuff not working and things like that. It's not going to be because they are more talented than us or we're not getting blown out. I promise you that. So if you're scared of that because of recent history, we'll be fine. But, yeah, it's Final Four. It's going to be stressful, but I'm so excited that we're here. We've been begging for this since we started the podcast, and we got it. You got anything else before we wrap up?
Just one more point on Villanova, but also as a whole about the KU team. What makes you, and I know we just talked a lot about them, but is it because we've gotten over the Elite Eight hump and out of the region that you're just more comfortable now saying that we're not going to lose to Nova? Because it's like, even without Moore, I'm still, like, if they were to play Creighton or Providence, I still am probably going to take Villanova in that matchup. But you were very nervous going into those games. Was it just like the matter of fact that, okay, pressure's off, we're in the Final Four now, we can kind of play more free,
yes,
and we're just going to – talent's going to show out? Is that all it is, or are you just something else coming out for you?
Well, I think that second half was like an awakening for this team.
But even then, you tweeted that yesterday before.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And yes, I do think there's an element, and you take away – I know it's a bad example, but 2018 – we got smoked. But other than that, you think 08 North Carolina, I felt like kind of similar feel to this team is we just had to get to the Final Four. You just had to get there because you had Davidson in front of you as a 10 seed. You just had to get there because the pressure was on. If you didn't, it was a massive failure. Now we're here, and I think we're just going to come out. We're going to play free. We're going to play good. And when this team plays free, we will beat Villanova. I just don't know if this team had been playing free against Providence at Creighton because the expectation was simply if you lose, it's a meltdown and you'll get laughed at and Bill Self's a choke artist and, oh, Kansas fails in March again. Whereas now, that's not the case. So I think this team can just play out and go out and be Kansas basketball, which is a really freaking good team. So that's where I'm at. Like, it's, it's strictly that – I've just been burned by so many teams losing in Elite Eights. And I know that there's clearly some sort of – there's a mental thing there that has hurt our teams. And I think it comes with just the pressure of getting there. But now you're there. Now I think you just – you play your game. And the best team, I feel like, normally wins the Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, we see high-seeded teams, like Loyola, I mean, Carolina even.
Yeah.
None of them – I mean, Final Four is their peak usually. So.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we'll wrap it up for now. We will hopefully have B-Turn back, and we'll do a big we'll do a Villanova preview. We'll dig into them a little more, and more storylines, things like that will pop up. But we'll for sure be back this week. It's going to be such a fun week. I mean, the best part about Final Four week is just your Twitter feed is all about Kansas. You're seeing interviews all over the place, stories from guys like CJ Moore and Jesse and Matt Tate. Like, those guys are putting out great content of stories about players and their family. Final Four week's just so fun. And feels great. We're here. And it's going to be a great weekend next week. One of the more fun weekends I've looked forward to in a while. So, as always, thank you for listening. We'll be back and rock chalk.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.